and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and I'm joined today by Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director for our first new episode of 2022. Happy New Year, Kev. How was the festive break? Is it a bit too late in the year to be asking that kind of question?
Well, we're recording on the 17th of January, so I think this should be officially the last day when we say Happy New Year.
Okay. Happy New Year.
Yeah, it's good. How was yours?
Yeah, it was nice and quiet, actually, which made for a nice change. I'm sure that was the experience of a lot of people listening in, a very quiet, festive period. How was yours? It's like it was something pretty similar.
Yes, I saw my parents, which made a change from last year when obviously nobody saw anybody.
Well, you say nobody. In the UK, we're currently, there's some turmoil in government at the moment around the various parties that were going on during the height of the lockdown period. So,
by politicians.
Yeah. I would say that not everybody was as stringent around the rules as you and I.
Well, you know, always stick to the rules, Rob.
Exactly. That's our motto here in Global Strategy, isn't it? Now, we're obviously only a few weeks into the new year, but there's already been plenty of quite significant news from Awin. Most notably, the appointment of David Lloyd as our brand new Chief Customer Officer. Now, I haven't actually had the chance to meet him yet, but you have, I believe, Kev. What can you tell us about the new board member and why exactly have Awin decided to appoint a Chief Customer Officer?
So David comes from, he's had a couple of sort of quite high profile jobs in the past, notably worked at Google and also Alibaba most recently. He's coming in to head up a brand new function for us. We've never had somebody that is focused on this. For me, it kind of makes complete sense. And, you know, we always strive to be a customer first business, and it makes sense to have somebody with that kind of umbrella view of everything, pulling all of the sort of constituent parts together. You know, when we're understanding what products we need, you can only do that by speaking to your customers, and then that understanding how to position those products. You can only position them in a way that is meaningful if you've got customer front of mind. So it's somebody that's got an umbrella view of all of those sort of constituent parts. So it's going to be sort of quite exciting to see that happening at the same time as lots of other kind of positive changes in the business as well.
Yeah. Now, David's only just arrived at Awin, but I'm sure he'll have been pleased to see that Awin US is already being recognized for delighting their customers out there by being named as the number one CPS network in MThink's annual Blue Book, which surveys the opinions of advertisers, agencies, and publishers in the industry. Now, Awin and Shareasale actually tied for first place with Rakuten, who have topped its rankings for 11 straight years. So it was quite a feat to have actually caught up with them. And I think demonstrates the growing reputation of Awin out in the US industry. So congratulations to all our colleagues across the Atlantic. And not to be left out, Awin UK also recently earned the accolade in 2022 of being named in Glassdoor's top 50 places to work, which we've been named in before, but this is the highest ranking we've ever achieved. We got to number 17 in the table, a spot that actually puts us above such household names as Google. We're above Apple. We're above Procter & Gamble, and we're above the chicken restaurant Nando's. How does that make you feel, Kev?
Yeah, it's good. No, we were 47th last year, so we've increased by 30 places, which is very satisfying. And it, actually, if you look at the ranking, I mean, the Glassdoor rank out of 5, and I think that we achieved a ranking of 4.4, and I think the highest achieved was 4.6. So there's kind of very marginal difference between number one and kind of number 50, really. So it's great to see us kind of really leap up the tables on that.
Yeah, that's all based on employee or ex-employee feedback as well, isn't it, I believe?
Yeah.
Have you put your review in yet?
I haven't, no. No, I haven't.
There you go. That could be next year. Could be.
Have you?
No, me neither. So. So for our first episode of the new year, I thought it relevant that we take the opportunity to do a bit of future gazing. I know you love doing that, Kev, and we can discuss some of our expectations for the industry in 2022, but we're not going to be alone on that front. You'll be pleased to know I've called in some expertise from across the business, and I asked a series of senior colleagues from around the world to give us their predictions for this year. So what we'll do is we'll kind of run through their predictions. They will send as voice notes to me over the last week or so. And then Kev, you and I can review them, talk about them, and kind of expand upon them a little bit. First up, I asked Adam Ross, our CEO, to share his thoughts.
I'm Adam Ross, and I'm the CEO of Awin. And my industry prediction for 2022 is that we're going to see a significant leveling up of the legacy infrastructure in our industry. So what do I mean by that? Well, if we start with tracking, for example, we can see a huge push to improve the sophistication and the robustness of tracking that exists in our industry to make sure that no matter how a user behaves, no matter how a user interacts with an advertiser, whether it's via their app, whether it's via their desktop site, and no matter the environment of that user's machine, that the industry can still track that sale and make sure that publisher commissions are safe and secure, but also ensure that advertisers have a holistic and full view of how all their marketing activity is being done. And secondly, we see a huge increase in sophistication in the way we do measurement. So with the last click legacy tracking really falling by the wayside and a much more sophisticated understanding of the entire customer journey. And I think this is particularly transformational because it allows for many different types of partners to grow and succeed in the space. And we want to make this easy for our clients to do. We have single view, our multi-touch attribution solution. We're introducing things like the gold standard internationally, which really looks to publicize and make it clear to the market, the advertisers that have the best and most sophisticated setups. And we see these initiatives as significantly increasing the amount of clients that do these things in the best possible way. And we think that's a great thing for the industry as a whole.
So Adam's talking a little bit there about some of the kind of fundamental linchpins of the industry really kind of being galvanized this year. I mean, do you think we're likely to see major changes in this regard in 2022, Kev? And it feels like this is a topic that has been talked about a lot over the years without necessarily making profound headway. Do you think that the climate has changed enough in the last 12 months or so to mean that 2022 is going to be the year where this really starts to level up?
I suppose there's quite a lot to unpick in what Adam said. There's kind of several points there, really, specifically on the tracking point. I think it's fair to say that this year will probably crystallize people's minds around tracking alternatives because we've had the delayed decision from Google around Chrome third-party cookies. So that's kind of effectively kicked that down the road by 12 months. But this year will be the year when people have to have alternatives if they are kind of hugely reliant on third-party tracking. I think that we recognize that as a business, but also as an industry in terms of the tracking initiative that we worked with other networks to release towards the end of last year. Incidentally, you can access that affiliatepartnertracking.com is the URL if you want to go on and look at that tracking work. I think that you know, the demise of third-party cookies, as I say, was a kind of a key driver for that piece of work. Other topics, kind of Adam talking about there, really about us understanding more holistically around publishers being credited for commissions. I think, you know, it's fair to say that last click is still pivotal for us. It's foundational. It's the way that we continue to reward. And even if we move beyond rewarding on last click, we will still recognize it as an important indicator of value and driving revenue and sales. I think one of the interesting things will be, and I know we're going to come on to talk about this, but as the affiliate ecosystem diversifies and as you have more potentially larger businesses who are maybe more commercially minded coming into the fold, that they will look to have solutions that recognize their contribution. And so that could start to generate additional conversations around alternative payment models, which I know that we've talked about for years, but it's felt like it's slightly tinkering around the edges. You know, we've talked about affiliate businesses growing who have only ever been affiliate businesses, but maybe as businesses come in to use affiliate marketing who haven't been affiliate first businesses, they will say, well, actually, we want to work. We need to have alternative commercial models that better reflect the value that we're adding.
Yeah, I guess there's an added legitimacy given to those arguments by these businesses coming in to the channel. And I think we've probably already seen that to a degree with maybe the kind of introduction of more media houses, for instance, like big brand kind of media partners coming into the channel and their size and scale, giving them the leverage in those conversations with advertisers to say, actually, you know, it's not enough that we only be paid on a last click basis because we can prove to you that we have generated value far beyond that for your brand, for your business. And so therefore we need to kind of negotiate some hybrid type of monetization model that's going to work for us as well as it is for you.
Alternatively as well, one of the things that has become apparent in working with brands that potentially want to become affiliates or have their own loyalty platforms, for example, is that they may be less focused in on the commissions that they're driving for the sales that they're generating, and actually they're more interested in the proposition. So they'd much rather have a compelling consumer proposition, be it an exclusive offer, deal, discount, whatever, from a brand that they can offer their consumers, because they know that it has a reflected value for them. That might be more important to them than actually being paid a small commission for each of the sales that's generated by those brands. So again, it's about us recognizing that as the ecosystem expands, you're going to have new businesses coming into the space that are going to be looking at the monetization or the optimization of that activity that best suits them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks to Adam for sending over our first prediction. Let's move on to our next one.
Hi, my name is Tim Lomborg. I'm the regional director for the Nordics, Eastern Europe, and DACH. DACH meaning Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And my prediction for 2022 is that we will see even more focus on sustainability in e-commerce. Sustainability is really much an umbrella term for many issues that also concern the e-commerce industry and that the e-commerce industry is also trying to address. And some of these topics include the impact that is made on climate change, selling and marketing healthy products that respect nature, asking the questions how we can improve social justice and workplace sustainability. And it even goes as far as looking into how sustainable the collection of data is with consumers, how much data should be collected. And all of these issues are really important for the e-commerce industry. And according to a few studies, such as one made by McKinsey, companies, regulators, and of course consumers have been more focused on sustainability in the past few years, despite the pandemic. And that's really interesting. And it really shows that there is a lot of focus on this topic. My specific affiliate marketing or just one prediction that I have here for today is that we will see an increased demand for more ethical publishers who can really connect brands to consumers who care and that are willing to pay more for sustainable goods and services. In the same and turnaround conclusion, we will also see more publishers seeking to scrutinize brands for how ethical their products really are. So there's going to be more focus around that. And we already see some really interesting publisher models turn up both in the Nordics, Eastern Europe, but also Germany specifically, where we have a lot of content sites, blogs that are focused around sustainable products. Those have grown in sales with 81% from 2020 to 2021. But we also see some really exciting technology partners coming up. And those are even, I think, as interesting, because they are bridging the gap between sustainability and profitability, which I think often in the past has been seen as a contradiction. And that's really interesting. And I think we're going to go more into that within the podcast. So, I think there is some exciting times ahead. And in summary, I think sustainability is becoming something that consumers care for more. And that is really driving publishers and businesses to create new models, driving innovation. And sustainability is surely a topic that we will follow as an industry for many years to come, but also here at Awin. And if you're more interested in the topic of sustainability, then please reach out.
Great. Well, this topic of sustainability is something that I'm personally particularly keen to put a spotlight on this year. I do think there are numerous great examples of affiliate partnerships that are geared towards helping consumers make more conscious choices, more informed choices around the products and services that they buy online. And that's only going to increase, I think, further as this topic becomes ever more pervasive in the coming months and years. And it goes back to one of the great characteristics of affiliate partners is the trust that they've built up with their audiences. And whether that's an individual blogger or influencer that you follow, or it could be a larger price comparison site or a media house whose output you rely on when making shopping decisions, and figuring out what is a genuinely sustainable or ethical product can be incredibly difficult, in part because it is such an opaque space right now. There's lots of fragmentation around these standards that are being applied to these individual products and around this kind of ethical criteria. So these partners, I think, can have a really crucial role to play in helping to inform shoppers on which ones are truly sustainable and which ones aren't. And like Tim said, it's not just actually those traditional publisher types that are helping in this regard either. There are also a range of technology partners that can provide some help in this space too, in slightly different ways, I think. So one of the great examples of this that Awin currently works with is a technology partner called Presize, and they provide advertisers with a solution that provides virtual fitting rooms for shoppers that are on their website, so on a fashion website. So an individual could try on a shirt or a pair of trousers or a dress, and they can use this virtual fitting room solution on the website. It takes their users' video to kind of look at the contours of their body and to see what actual size is going to fit them accurately, so that they make sure they get the right fit before purchasing it. And that kind of cutting edge tech is really therefore preventing shoppers. We know that there's a behavior amongst online shoppers particularly of buying several sizes of the same outfit, because there's a lack of standardization around sizing currently in the fashion industry, which means that shoppers will just kind of buy several different sizes of the same outfit to ensure that they do at least have one that fits them, and then they'll then send the rest of them back. And that is then creating this massive amount of returns, which are a real problem within the fashion industry and a huge logistical headache, not to mention obviously a bit of an ecological nightmare as well. And so yeah, I think that this is definitely a kind of niche that's going to take off this year in a way.
I mean, well, it's a solution like that, for example, is there clearly has to be a commercial benefit for doing it, and for a brand that there's an obvious benefit in them being able to reduce returns rate. You know, it means that those sales become more profitable. By the same token, they can sell their solution as being one that is, as you say, more ecologically sound, because it reduces carbon footprint, it reduces the packaging, maybe the journeys that are involved, the wastage that is inevitably involved in sending out multiple products. So, you know, it can be couched as a sustainable thing, but clearly there's it's commercially viable as well. And I suppose that's, as coming back to Tim's point, that's the key thing. If you can combine those two things, then it works. For me, I think that, coming back to a point that you made as well, publishers that are focusing in on this have a responsibility, I think, and have hopefully they have a recognition that actually this is a bandwagon that every brand is jumping in on. And so it's possible for every brand to say that they are doing things that are based around sustainability, but actually how many of them actually are. And so actually this comes back to the power of the affiliate to be able to kind of arbitrate and have the authenticity around making sure that those that are front of mind. And it is now commercially attractive for brands to want to focus in on this as well. I recently read that the Co-op in the UK produce a sustainability guide every year, and they recently said that the UK spend on ethical products and investments had surpassed £100 billion for the first time, and that had gone up by 25% in just 1 year. The Guardian, I think, estimated that the UK households now spend more than £2,000 per household on ethical products. So the commercial benefit of getting that right is clear to brands.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I mentioned Presize as just one of many technology solutions available in the Awin Master Tag, who can be switched on really quickly to a fashion advertiser's website in that particular instance. And actually, that point segues quite nicely into our next prediction.
I'm Paul Stewart, Group Strategic Partnerships Director, and my prediction for 2022 is that retailer spend through the Awin network on third-party e-commerce solutions will more than double year on year. For context, last year this was around €10 million on the Awin network. This is a slightly self-serving prediction, as I oversee the global recruitment and optimization of these types of partnerships. But to provide a reason as to why I think this will happen, spend is already growing at 50% year on year, and retailer interest in how Awin can help them outside of traditional publisher types has increased drastically since COVID poured petrol on the battle for consumer attention online. The macro point here is that the world changed quickly, and partnerships that unlock new services and features are often faster to deploy via Awin than to build in-house. Speed of change is everything, and the right partners will help retailers that act quickly and decisively capture a disproportionate share of the new online spend off of grabs.
I like that Paul's actually put a number against his prediction as well, so we can really hold him accountable for that by the end of the year.
And if that's his internal target, now everybody knows.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I mean, this technology partner space, it's something that we talked quite a bit about last year, particularly kind of like the latter parts of last year. It does feel like one where there's a hell of a lot of interest and innovation occurring at the moment, doesn't it, in the channel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not a surprise that we would feature this trend. I think, you know, typically when you see trends pieces, they feel very kind of remote, in that people want to say stuff that is going to happen, but it's not terribly realistic. It might be something that might happen in 5 years' time, but the fact is we're already in 2022, so what's going to be happening in the next few months? And this for me feels like it's a real continuation of something that we're seeing that's rapidly evolving on the network. I mean, I'd like to think we've been sort of an important facilitator of these types of partnerships over the past 5 years or so, and I think the accelerated growth we're seeing has helped drive interest and growth elsewhere as other businesses kind of recognize that these are excellent value adds for brands. I mean, just to be clear, the kind of things that we're talking about, these sort of e-commerce solutions that can help drive conversions, increase basket values, optimize the customer experience. But for me, what's critical is that instead of them being sold as sort of separate tech builds, that they can actually be easily incorporated into a tech stack. So our master tag or whatever technology is available from other businesses, but they are all deliverable on a payment on performance solution in exactly the same way as you'd think of kind of a more of a traditional publisher. I think we've got something like 60 of these partners, probably more than that now, in the tech stack. I think the challenge for us this year will be about building out that narrative about what that tech stack looks like and the fact that it's kind of this plug and play thing that's helping you to solve, you know, if there's an e-commerce problem out there that needs to be solved, it's likely that we have or are talking to a business that has a tech solution that can help address it.
Yeah, I was speaking to a colleague a few months back about, you know, how do we talk about this? What's the way that you frame what all of these different businesses do, because they are so diverse and so divergent. They do lots and lots of different things, and there's really no limit to a degree to kind of how businesses can work with them. And his analogy was really kind of like thinking about it as a kind of app store for e-commerce, which I think was quite compelling. This idea that you've got instant access to all of these cutting edge new technologies on essentially the basis of, you know, clicking a button and setting it live on your site to experiment with it, trial it, see if it works. If it doesn't, you can ditch it and try something else. And all the while you're experimenting with these partners, there's no upfront cost. You kind of pay on performance, and it's a really seamless integration kind of experience as well. So I quite like that analogy.
I think for me as well, having sort of the having worked in the industry for a long time, I've seen lots of trends or trends that sort of gain momentum that have been tried a few years before that just didn't work at that particular time. You know, go back 10, 12 years, Awin really wanted to drive kind of media house adoption of affiliate marketing, but it wasn't quite the right time for it in the way that it is now. Ethical and sustainable was something, again, that we were pushing about a decade ago, but it wasn't quite the right time. And for me, it feels as if this is something similar. We gained some traction with individual tech partners sort of back in the day or tech solutions, but it didn't really have the momentum behind it that it does now. And I think that there's kind of no magic answer to this. I guess it's just enough companies coalescing at the right time with compelling propositions and a platform or a company that's able to facilitate it, all just sort of, I don't know, coming together and being able to create a really powerful narrative, and then that builds momentum. And it really does feel as though we're in that stage at the moment.
Yeah. Next up, we have a prediction from across the Atlantic.
Hello, I'm Alex Forsch, president of Awin US, and my prediction for 22 is that influencer marketing will continue its explosive growth this year and well beyond. Business Insider expects to see a 72.5% year-on-year uplift for the channel, which eMarketer predicts to reach $4 billion this year in the US alone. Not only D2C, but now also B2B brands are eager to create social proof and tap into new content and audiences, already making influencer discovery, recruitment, and engagement the number one request we see from clients on our network today. A rising share of influencer budgets will go to nano and micro influencers as brands prioritize content creation over audience reach. While TikTok has paved the way for this, other social platforms have now expanded their creator tools for smaller influencers, as seen, for example, for Instagram, when enabling shareable link stickers on stories regardless of a user's followings. As efficiency and measurement will continue to present challenges brand sites, we will see more influencer-focused agencies and managed service offerings emerge to take on the heavy lifting of managing sizable influencer campaigns. Also, robust tracking solutions provided by platforms like Awin and Shareasell will see influencer and affiliate marketing activities merge further to effectively assess the value an influencer plays in increasingly complex multi-touch and multi-channel consumer journeys.
So, influencer marketing there from Alex. This is very much in your wheelhouse, isn't it, Kev? I would describe you as a nano influencer for the affiliate industry.
Anti-influencer.
All jokes aside, though, as Alex mentioned, the kind of opening up of link stickers to all accounts by Instagram in particular, I think, has the potential to radically transform the extent to which affiliate marketing is used by many smaller influencers on their platform. And I think that could mean we start to see a lot more brands embracing influencer partnerships via their affiliate programs than we have done historically. And it may even, therefore, I think, also help push the attribution conversation away from last click as a consequence, because we know that a lot of these influencer partners are necessarily influencing consumer decisions higher up that funnel.
Yeah, I think it's definitely opened up the opportunity to a much wider audience, and that obviously correlates with the micro nano influencer, whatever you want to call it, whatever it means. I think that what's interesting is that a lot of those publishers, influencers, whatever you want to call them, would historically have just been traditional affiliates, the long tail affiliates that require, you know, it's a volume game. You have to work with a lot of them in order to see tangible impact on sales. But if you're measuring beyond sales, that isn't the only metric that you look at. I think one of the, we've talked in the past about how influencer marketing has had to embrace a little bit more of the performance-based marketing, so therefore it's gravitated towards the affiliate industry. But actually, I think this is maybe an opportunity to reinvent some of the long-tail publishers, because one of the issues we've always had with affiliate categorization is that it's quite crude. And actually, with these platforms opening up their ability to monetize content, what you probably will end up with is a lot of publishers become, in no matter how small they are, having multiple routes to market, you know, using social media platforms as well as, you know, blogger platforms or whatever to push their content out. So I think anything that forces us to maybe have a conversation around how we classify affiliates, which has always been deeply flawed, is probably quite a good thing. From a payment point of view, I think it goes back to some of the previous points that we've been making, that it's not necessarily the end of last click, but we do need to be more creative and more commercially minded about what represents a viable payment mechanism for what can be really good quality content.
Yeah, definitely. But it's definitely going to be a space that there's going to be a lot more interest in this year. And I think already, having spoken to Alex actually out in the US, she mentioned the fact that so many PR agencies, they've seen more requests and inquiries from PR agencies out in the States than they've ever seen before around how can they coordinate these influencer campaigns through the affiliate channel? How can they start to apply some of the more performance-led metrics that we're used to applying in our channel to some of the campaigns that they coordinate? And that's not necessarily to assume that those bigger kind of PR campaigns with celebrities and their kind of social accounts that they have millions of followers of are going to fall into the channel and into our remit. But I think that this particular strand of maybe more niche, more micro, more nano influencers will inevitably become something of a stalwart of a lot of affiliate programs in the coming months.
And just two other points as well, which I think are going to be interesting to monitor this year and into next year and beyond as well, is the two points are, I'd say, the professionalization of the industry. So I think that in the way that if you go back 20 years, affiliate marketing was seen as, to use the cliche, the Wild West, I think that lack of standards within the influencer channel has held it back. And actually, I think that for me has always been a slight concern, the fact that if we align ourselves with this area of promotional activity that is less regulated. However, the industry has indicated that, you know, they are making some moves to try and create their own set of standards. And obviously the regulators are kind of hot on their heels as well. And the other one is standardization. And by that, I mean standardization about what we measure as well. So I think that those two additional points layered on the general growth are going to be, I think they are sort of aligned with growth anyway. If you have those two things, then they should help hopefully facilitate growth.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so finally, our last prediction comes all the way from Sydney, Australia.
Hi, I'm Zane McIntyre, CEO of Commission Factory, and my industry prediction for 2022 is the continued rise of super apps. Mobile commerce is what is leading the rise in super apps in the West. Mobile transactions in the US alone are predicted to top 266 billion. This number is enormous and doesn't account for any other Western countries, but even if so, surpassing the sheer volume of mobile app transactions in China will be almost impossible, where they are predicted to top 60.5 trillion in 2022. Mobile wallets, mobile financial services, and social media are colliding right now, which is also driving the development of super apps. Companies like PayPal and Afterpay will find it necessary to diversify their consumer experience and serve as an access point for even more services, as their core business models will come under further scrutiny or potentially more regulation and legislation that could hinder them. The super app status is highly prized by many companies because the company or their platform that can service multiple aspects of the consumer journey or experience will inevitably be one of the most valuable companies in that market. We're already seeing the integration of affiliate marketing into the earliest versions of these super apps in the West through Revolut, Klarna, Afterpay, PayPal, and other buy now, pay later providers that have enormous reach and can provide a really strong affiliate or lead gen platform for online retailers without ever sharing data or breaching their users' trust. The use of super apps for mobile commerce also simplifies the process as a single sign-in for shopping and an earn and burn ecosystem of a loyalty program. I don't see super apps reaching the same level of prominence in the West as we have seen in Asia, because our primary or hegemonic OS providers, being Apple and Google, will want to ensure a super app never sits on top of their OS. This is why we have seen both OS providers provide their own wallets, payment systems, and dedicated IDs tied to their company. But nonetheless, the shift in the focus of attention from traditional advertising to a more seamless integration into what are essentially payment processing providers, who will undoubtedly be the epicenter of this rise, is coming. Every shift in our society always creates more wealth and more opportunity for others. And for online retailers, the shift will be in their associations with these large payment processing providers vying for our attention, our engagement, and also our money.
So, super apps. I think this is a funny one because I agree with Zane, actually, in that the only likely source or plausible source of a super app in the West is probably going to be either Google or Apple, who essentially own the rails for the consumer internet, how we kind of generally tend to engage with online. And that's either through the hardware, through the iPhone, for instance, and the App Store in Apple's case, or through a combination of Chrome, through Android and Google Play, which is their App Store equivalent. But as Zane mentions, there are a bunch of primarily, and quite interestingly, financial players who are building out their own environments in such a way as to take ownership of how individuals are discovering, shopping, connecting and managing their money, which has the potential, I think, to become something close to a super app. I don't know if we'll ever have something in the West which is quite as unified as WeChat has become in China. I don't know if that's just something, a phenomenon that grew up in a particular context at a particular moment in time that just was able to scale really quickly and integrate all of these different functions into one app. And primarily because that population migrated onto mobile maybe before experiencing desktop adoption in the same way that we kind of gradually made our way to a kind of mobile user experience in the West. And so with these financial players, kind of more and more of them are competing for our attention and our spend, tying in exclusive deals and promotions is going to be a big influence, I think, around USPs and for that eventual user adoption. And they're all trying to get to that tipping point, to my mind, where they've got enough people on there that an alternative just isn't a viable option, which is why I think we've started to see a growing number of these businesses enter the affiliate channel in the last kind of year or so, trying to source those deals from brands as a means of really scaling their loyalty offering for their users and to try to attract them to their platform.
Yeah, I think this is the one I struggle with of the five, because it's the one I can't quite see the strongest affiliate connection with. I think that it feels quite nascent at the moment from an affiliate perspective, and so we can make sort of predictions, but the others feel like continuations, whereas this one feels like it's quite disruptive, and very kind of we're at the foothills of what it could look like from an affiliate perspective. I think you're right that where we have seen the biggest impact have been, as you say, in fintech, and there you're looking at businesses that are trying to build out their own ecosystem. They're trying to build out customer loyalty. The fact that they capture so much transaction data is extremely powerful. If you are looking to break the dominance enjoyed by, say, Google and Apple, then purchasing power is a really sort of strong way of being able to target consumers. But again, doing that in a mindful way that you're not abusing financial data and your kind of banking data is something that's very personal, very private. So, you know, using that in a respectful, moderate way is obviously important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if listeners are interested in finding out more about some of the predictions that have been shared today by our global experts, you can read our top 10 industry predictions article, which is a two-parter published on the Awin site right now. But beyond these, Kev, are there any others that you were kind of considering taking a look forward at 2022 and how you think the industry is going to develop?
I think, I guess sort of just taking a sort of standing still and saying, right, where are we? What's the state of the industry at the moment? I wrote recently that it feels as if the affiliate industry kind of goes through waves of innovation, and I kind of particularly think back to when the 100% cashback model came into the industry. That was very disruptive. Prior to that, when affiliates really embraced using paid search activity, again, that was very disruptive. It generated a huge amount of revenue that was then reinvested in other affiliate models and other affiliate businesses by the people doing that. And then for a while, it felt as if we weren't really seeing a huge amount of shift and movement. I think some people got quite bored and quite disengaged with the affiliate industry. And what I feel like at the moment is that actually there's been an explosion in affiliate types and not just affiliates, partners, publishers, how affinity deals, how brand-to-brand partnership, whatever, however you want to label it. I feel that there's been a huge surge in companies that are just generally interested in the model or the connections that they can make very easily. And the model just, you know, because the model is performance-based, if you can make it work, then the risk is minimal. So we're seeing that from a publisher perspective. I think in 2021, we signed up something like 16,000 new click active publishers on the network. Many more will have applied, and that's going to be one of the key challenges for us, that it always has been. You know, publishers apply in their droves on a daily basis, and then they disengage, and clearly they were engaged enough to apply. So the key for us as a network is going to be trying to ensure that we have a relevant conversation as soon as those publishers sign up, to try and engage them as soon as possible. But yeah, I think that it's kind of, we've gone from maybe a few years ago where it felt like it was a little bit, you know, it's feast or famine, and now it feels like we're in feast time, where it's a nice problem to have, how we accommodate all of these huge businesses of all shapes and sizes that are all sort of clamoring for a slice of the affiliate pie. It's a nice problem to have, and I'd much rather be an account manager managing an affiliate program now than I was 15 years ago when I used to do it and you were sort of scrabbling around for opportunities. How about you?
Yeah, no, I think that your point around, you know, feast or famine, there's so much choice now in terms of the types of partner that you can connect with through the channel is really fascinating. And I'd also say that the kind of more traditional aspect of the industry around incentive partnerships, that in itself is, it feels like, is going through some degrees of transformation. I think there's maybe more allure around kind of working with those partners in slightly novel ways. And I think the kind of economic climate that we're operating in now, you know, 2 years into a global pandemic, which is becoming kind of like an epidemic, the kind of recession that came off the back of that, huge transformations in the economy, and lots of people still suffering to a large extent and needing to try to make their money go as far as they possibly can, means that there's going to be even more renewed interest, I think, in helping shoppers save money, finding new ways of making their incomes go that much further, which means that there's going to be renewed importance around these partners being able to connect shoppers to those deals and discounts. I don't think that that is something that is maybe thought about a lot in the current circumstances, because we've been slightly distracted by the shiny baubles of all these new innovative partners that have been entering the channel.
Yeah. And, you know, Also, on the flip side, you talked about the opportunities coming through from a publisher point of view. Look at how many SMEs now are discovering affiliate marketing for the first time. You know, Awin Access, we've got hugely ambitious targets to hit with our kind of micro SME targeted product this year, and then huge targets the year afterwards as well. And that for me feels, yes, they are daunting targets, but it does also feel achievable. When you look at the amount of incoming inquiries that we're getting, but also the audiences that we can go out to with that, isn't just about saying what small businesses are out there. It's about going out to all, like, small business organizations. It's about going out to maybe consultants or agencies that may have clients on their books who have never even, or are just starting to explore kind of digital marketing channels for the first time. So, you know, it, from a flip side, that SME opportunity is huge. And then we then somehow need to connect all of these new publishers with all of these small businesses as well. So it kind of almost feels as though, sort of going back to slightly older days, where it's, we start talking about the relationships again and about those one-to-one relationships, because you can guarantee that there will be some great quality small affiliates out there that are a great fit for niche suppliers, SME businesses, and they will want to have those kind of very intimate kind of one-to-one relationships whereby that they are, you know, very symbiotically adding value to each other.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this has been a fairly mammoth segment within the podcast, and I think we've covered quite a lot of ground in terms of predictions going forward. We'll take a quick break and then return just with some updates on upcoming content. Well, we've discussed the outlook for this year, Kev, but what about the more immediate future? What updates are arriving on the horizon in the coming weeks ahead?
So I guess one of the main new releases that we're going to have for Q1 is for specifically for advertisers and agencies is our publisher recommendations report, which we've been, the BI team have been building for a little while now, and we've been having kind of iterations of it that have been used internally. We're going to be making that available, looks into the kind of the memberships of publishers and advertisers and assesses the similarities between different publishers, and then it makes recommendations for advertisers using kind of a degree of machine learning built into the report. So that's coming soon. So that's quite an exciting launch for us. Edge Poo, who is the product manager, product marketing manager for it, is going to be joining us hopefully on the next podcast. Hopefully his wife will not have their first baby before then, and he will be available so that I don't have to make it up as I go along describing what it does.
Well, you're doing a good job so far, so
thanks.
On my front, I'm currently immersed in the new Awin report for 2022. It's that time of the year again, which I absolutely relish, and while I can't reveal too many details just yet of what the new report will contain, I can tell you that it's going to look a lot different to previous editions. We've decided to do away with our traditional format of country market profiles and global trends, and instead pursue a slightly different approach, which I'm quite excited about. We'll provide more tasters of what you can expect in the lead up to its launch, which is currently
scheduled is British, right. Scheduled is American.
Thank you, Kev. scheduled to be in early March, but for now I'll keep you guessing. So that's a little teaser from me for now. In the meantime, that's all we have time for this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Awin Talks again in 2022. And if you can take a moment to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to us, we'd be immensely grateful, wouldn't we, Kev?
We would indeed.
That's the most sincere thing you've said all year. For now, though, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Kev.
Bye.